Chapter 17. Vulgatis, Divinus Prime. Commander Hesbin soared through an ice-sharp cloud, Frost fixing his face into a grimace as he climbed higher.
"You will fall!"
he said, his words as venomous as they were breathless. His wings pounded him through the tail of the cloud and revealed the dizzying landscape below, the Tamarus Mountains, jagged and brutal, clawing up into the sky, and, clinging to the highest peak, Vulgatis. Hesbin glared at the fortress as he circled high above its battlements. It hung out over the valley, like an outstretched limb, its walls glittering with muzzle flashes as the Seraphim launched volley after volley down onto Hesbin's men. The narrow, winding road that led up to the gates of Vulgatis was heaped with dead dragoons, and they had only begun the assault a few hours earlier. Hesbin had promised the unbegotten prince he would have the gates down by midday, but none of his men had even reached the feet of the statues that held up the cathedral-sized portico. The gunfire from the walls was merciless, and the single path that led to the gates was completely exposed. It was a pitiful massacre. Even their tanks had been obliterated before they could get anywhere near the walls of the convent. They were now smouldering in the middle of the road, blasted onto their sides and leaking flames as the dragoons fell back under another pummeling barrage from the guns on the walls. Zorambus had promised that reinforcements would come from Mormotha, an army big enough to topple Vulgatis's walls, an army led by the Arch-Cardinal himself, an army that had never arrived. Hesbin could see black armoured forms dashing across the battlements, beetle-like and tiny from his height, as they gunned down his men. Every now and then, one of his soldiers would get within spitting distance of the huge porch, and the defenders would drop down from the battlements, borne on screaming winged jets and revelling in the ease of slaughtering the poor souls trying to lay charges at the foot of the statues. He had tried to bring his own heavy guns to bear on the fortress, but the second his men trundled them into view, the Sisters of the Hallowed Gate revealed another of their cowardly ploys. The walls of the crevasse on either side of the road looked to be nothing but sheer, unscalable granite, but every time Hesbin's guns moved within firing distance, hidden artillery boomed from the mountainside, blasting the weapons off the road. His great army was in tatters. The glorious victory he had imagined had turned into a shameful rout. He looped lower, still out of range, trying to spot a weakness in the architecture of the convent, anything that could give him a last chance at victory. There was nothing. The outer wall was not bone, but solid rock, and it seemed to have sprung into being, fully formed at the moment of the mountain's birth. Hesbin cursed and loosed off a few shots from his las pistol, knowing he was too far away to hit anything, but too enraged to care. His wings faltered as a horrific image filled his thoughts, a crimson bloody face covered by a white veil. The face wore a wide, lipless grin, and it appeared to have no skin. The vision was so disturbing that by the time Hesbin had remembered the need to fly, he had plunged halfway down the battlements. The Sisters of the Hallowed Gate saw him hurtling towards them and loosed off several rounds from their bolters. Hesbin banked hard, swerving away from the walls, but not before one of the shots tore a ragged hole through his stomach, blasting straight through his flak armour. He arched in agony and fell from the sky towards the corpse-lined road below, dropping his pistol and clutching at the wound. Through his agony, he retained enough sense to beat his wings before he crashed into the mountainside. He skimmed over the ranks of his cowering troops and finally landed with a flurry of thrashing wings in the gorse bushes at the roadside. Bolter shells thudded into the ground around him, hurling chunks of sod into the air. and Hesbun lurched to his feet, staggering behind a rocky outcrop for cover. Shots hit the rock, pulverizing it and showering him in dust and chippings. He groaned and staggered off back down the road, barging through his men as his life poured between his fingers and shells exploded all around him. The road looped around a shoulder of rock and he was out of sight of the fortress. Dragoons were staggering in every direction, hauling their dead and dying up the road and clutching at their wounds. Even through the red haze of his pain, Hesbun was awed by the brutality of the scene. Corpses and burning tanks crowded the road as far as he could see. Then blood loss and pain overcame him, and he collapsed to the ground.
"Take me to the prince," he gargled,
as some of the men caught sight of his wings and realized who he was.
"Get me to Zarambus," he groaned,
as the soldiers' faces merged into a smear of colours and shapes.
"You are a brave man," said a kind voice, as the world swam back into view.
Hesbun woke with a jolt as he recalled his stomach wound. He tried to sit, but realized he was strapped down to a bench. Peter Zarambus was leaning over him, his tanned, weathered face creased into a concerned smile. He gave a gentle laugh as he wiped Hesbun's sweaty hair out of his eyes. "But attacking Volgatus alone may have been a little ambitious." Hesbun looked around. He was in the prince's command tent, but they were alone. None of the other officers were present, and Hesbun presumed they were dead. There were a few books and data slates next to the prince's cot, and a table covered with parchments and boxes. He looked down at his wound and saw, to his horror, that it was clamped wide open, exposing his steaming innards to the cold mountain air. The skin around the opening was covered with a complex network of lines and symbols that had spread over his body. The symbols seemed to shift slightly as he looked at them, flowing into each other, as if they wished to avoid his gaze. They radiated from the bloody hole in a complex sunburst. Zarambus was still smiling compassionately, and Hesbun was no longer in any pain. But as he tested his bonds, Hesbun felt a rush of fear. He noticed, for the first time, that there was something oddly flat and lifeless about the prince's eyes, as though they belonged to a different, crueler face than the one they were currently looking out of.
"My lord," he said, "my wound, is it..."
Zarambus gripped his hand and shook his head.
"Nothing to worry about, Commander. I removed the shells and cleaned it myself."
The prince smiled again, but now that he had noticed it, Hesbun was fixated on the idea that his lord was wearing someone else's eyes, or something else's eyes. They were dead and inhuman. The idea filled him with a growing sense of terror.
"Then am I healed?" he asked quietly.
Zarambus simply smiled before wandering over to the table and opening one of the boxes.
"My lord,"
gasped Hesbun,
"there was no way we could have reached the gates. There was nothing I could do. The men fought bravely, but there was no cover."
His voice cracked.
"Where were the reinforcements? What happened to the army from Mormutha?"
Zarambus turned around with his hands clasped together, holding whatever he had taken from the box. His smile faltered at the mention of Mormutha.
"Dravus failed me."
Hesbun's panic grew as Zarambus approached, the smile returning to his face. He strained against the straps again, but they were fastened tight. Suddenly he was sure that the prince meant him harm. He did not want to find out what was in his hands. He drew a breath to scream, but to his horror, he found that his mouth had vanished.
His jaw worked furiously, but there was no longer an opening. His skin was now stretched seamlessly over the lower half of his face.
Zarambus shook his head like a disapproving parent.
Oh, no need to trouble yourself, Commander Hesbin. You did everything I needed and more.
He nodded at the carnage outside.
The deaths of your men are exactly what I needed to complete your transformation.
Hesbin howled behind his healed-up mouth, but the sound was too muffled to carry. Zarambus reached the bench and peered into the open wound.
Remember what I said, Commander Hesbin. If we are to serve the gods, we must think like gods.
He nodded at the tent door.
We have a vast army at our disposal. Your victory is ensured that. But even if you could reach those gates, how long would it take, Commander?
He paused, waiting for a response, then laughed.
Sorry, you can't answer, can you? Well, let me answer for you, my friend. Too long. By the time we entered Volgatis, the Blood Angels would have swaggered up here in their pretty suits and found a way to take what is mine.
The gentle humour of his voice vanished, replaced by a furious snarl. Then he regained his composure.
However, he said, if we think like gods, we see that there are other kinds of gate than simple stone doors.
He touched the lines that covered Hesbin's skin.
But even the most powerful practitioner needs help to pierce the walls between what is real and what is unreal. So many deaths, Hesbin.
The prince's eyes gleamed.
You have given me so many deaths today. All that pain, all those souls crying out together, here where the Emperor made the boundaries so thin. The deaths of your men have given me just the chance I need, Commander Hesbin.
He opened his hands and dangled something over Hesbin's wound, something that wriggled and writhed in his grip. Hesbin stared at it in horror, unsure what he was looking at. It was an insect of some kind, a long, serpentine creature, clad in metallic scales. It looked like a silverfish, only several inches long.
I may have been a little disingenuous when I said the Emperor blessed you with those wings, General Hesbin,
said Zarambus, dropping the silverfish into the open wound. Hesbin strained wildly against his bonds as the cold, eel-like shape burrowed into his guts.
They were a divine gift, but the divinity involved is probably not one you're familiar with.
Hesbin could no longer feel the silverfish, but he could feel a sickening sensation emanating from the place where it had entered his body, an unpleasant churning, as though his insides had turned to liquid.
But what matters is that you have been touched by the other world, my friend. Your soul has been made malleable, receptive to metamorphosis.
As Hesbin jolted wildly on the bench, attempting to break the straps, Zarambus hurried back over to the table and opened another box. He drew out a quill and a bottle of ink and returned to his captive.
You will be my catalyst, General, he said,
tracing carefully over the shapes drawn on Hesbin's skin.
Your heroism will accelerate the change that Divinus Prime has been crying out for. Your sacrifice will mean an end to all this stultifying stasis.
Hesbin moaned in horror as a blue, oily hump forced itself from his stomach.
Ah, you see, said Zaramba, stepping back. I must be the first to reach the Blade Petrific. There is more at stake than you realize.
The blue shape spiralled and rippled as it rose from Hesbun's body. The pain seemed oddly remote, but he could see that his torso was breaking apart. As it rolled and swelled, Hesbun began to make out its shape. It was like an enormous rayfish, flat, boneless, crescent-shaped, 6 or 7 feet wide, and studded with yellow eyes. As it slipped from his intestines, it drifted up into the air, as though floating in water, its wings or gills rippling like they were caught in a current. It hovered over Hesbun, turning to stare at him with banks of eyes, studying him with the same inhuman coldness he had seen in Zarambus. Then it opened its wide scar of a mouth, revealing cruel, shark-like teeth, and let out an ear-splitting scream. It sounded like 1,000 infants, screeching simultaneously for food. Behind his sealed mouth, Hesbun began to laugh. The sight of such lunacy slithering from his body, combined with the chorus of screams coming from its mouth, was too much for him. As his sanity deserted him, Hesbun decided that he was an airfish too, just like the thing billowing above his head. He relaxed back onto the bench, laughing as more demonic shapes slid from his broken body. Zarambus sighed with pleasure, his eyes closed and his head thrown back. Then he continued writing studiously on Hesbun's skin, and a whole menagerie of blue-fleshed, monstrous shapes surged and whirled into the room, all screaming as they were born. After a while, there were so many of the demons rolling and swaying around the tent that it collapsed, spilling the nightmarish things out onto the mountainside. By the time Hesbun's mind finally crumbled, he was drifting in an ocean of blue, shimmering flesh, barely aware that Zarambus was laughing ecstatically as he ordered the screaming demons into battle. Hesbun knew his sanity had finally deserted him because of the man who had appeared behind Zarambus. Despite everything he had witnessed in the last few minutes, he still knew this newcomer could not exist. The man was small and skeletally thin. He was dressed in plain black robes, and could have passed for a simple monk, were it not for the glimpse of his head, just visible in the deep folds of his pointed hood. It was the long, cruel-looking skull of a raptor, with black, empty eye sockets looking out from each side. It was not the strangeness of the monk's face that horrified Hesbun, though. It was the oddness of his movements. He approached in a series of dislocated flickers, like a collection of old photographic slides played on a broken projector. He flickered and shuddered towards Zarambus, shedding multiple images as he moved, creating dozens of likenesses, like a double exposure. One of his arms ended in a grasping bird-like talon, and the other arm was a silver serpent, coiling and hissing as the monk winked in and out of reality. Hesbun tried again to scream, and this time he strained so furiously that his skin began to tear, creating a new mouth. Zarambus grew pale as he saw the monk and gave him a deep bow. "My lord, I hope you are enjoying the performance this time."
"The game is over and begun," replied the monk.
His voice registered in several octaves at once, from a subterranean rumble to a shrill, barely perceptible shriek.
"The blade is seen, unseen. It is almost in reach."
Zarambus looked horrified.
"Livia's in the fortress."
"She has reached the shrine."
"No,"
whispered Zarambus, glancing out through the tent doors at the battle outside.
"No!"
he cried, grasping a clump of his own hair, as though he were about to scalp himself.
"It's me, my lord! It has to be me! That girl cannot serve you! She is a fool!"
"A fool that will beat, and has beaten you to the prize,"
rumbled and screamed the monk.
"Never!" cried Zarambus.
He rounded on Hesbun and howled a torrent of incomprehensible words. Hesbun exploded as demons clawed their way through his flesh, screaming towards the fortress.